You're listening to LawPod UK. It's a podcast that covers developments across all aspects of civil and public law in the United Kingdom. All the comments are current at the time of podcast publication. It's brought to you by the barristers at One Crown Office Row, and this edition is presented by Rosalind English.
Brexit. No, don't reach for the off switch. You really will learn something from this episode. It's the latest in Catherine Bernard's series on the legal steps to withdrawal from the European Union, now possibly only weeks away. Professor Bernard talks to journalist Bonnie Soanes about possible solutions to all the shadow boxing that's going on between the UK and the EU. Are we still in Groundhog Day in these negotiations?
I think the key moment was that vote in January when Theresa May lost by 230 votes on her meaningful vote. And there was celebration on both sides, that Leavers were celebrating because it was a step towards us leaving with no deal on the 29th of March. And the Remainers celebrated because they thought there was a move towards stopping Brexit in some form. And since then, we've had the Brady Amendment, which has essentially said to Theresa May, go back to Brussels to renegotiate the withdrawal agreement. And the Dromey-Spellman Amendment, which wasn't actually legally binding, where Parliament said, we don't want a no-deal Brexit. And then last night, it was meant to be a rather uncontroversial motion, which was going to put the two things together. And the ERG said no, because we want to keep a no-deal Brexit on the table. And so further humiliation for Theresa May last night. She wasn't there to see it. And from the European point of view, it looks like she just cannot control her own party. So why is it in their interest to offer any concessions at all when there's absolutely no guarantee she'll be able to get them through Parliament in the first place?
Do you think it's time for a big idea? It was supposed to be Parliament taking back control, but Parliament is so factionalised that it can't agree a way forward. It may, in a few days' time, 27th of February, agree that it will rule out no deal with politicians joining together across party to do that. But what about a big idea, something like a grand coalition? This is a very pressing situation.
That's right. And that's what I think a lot of our European colleagues think. Why can't Parliament recognise the severity of the situation and the two sides of the House come together in a grand coalition, even if it's just over this vote, in order to get Theresa May's deal through Parliament? But the trouble is they just don't understand the highly tribal nature of British politics. And the fact is that were Theresa May to propose such a thing, it may just get the meaningful vote through. But, of course, that's not the end of the story, because you've also got to get the WAB through, the Withdrawal Implementation Bill, which gives effect to the withdrawal agreement into UK law. And, of course, at some stage, she could be subject to another vote of no confidence, or the government could be subject to a vote of no confidence. And there's no guarantee that those disenchanted ERG folk would support her in that vote. So the problem is not so much the instant vote, but it's the consequences down the line. And as we know, there is a real concern in the Conservative Party that if there's any acknowledgement of some sort of customs union as the landing zone, then that's likely to break up her party. And she's desperate, Theresa May's desperate to keep her party together.
And so the options people have talked about are a Norway-style deal, or perhaps it looks like the ERG is getting its way within government, and we may be headed for no deal, the so-called cliff edge, unless Parliament can vote it down in a few weeks' time. What do you think is likely to happen with all the options now? And has Europe ramped up its no deal contingency plans?
So certainly both the UK and the EU side have ramped up contingency planning. But the trouble is it's been too little too late. We will not be ready on the 29th of March. And for all the talk about falling back on WTO terms as if it was some magnificent safety net, it is not. UK and a Changing Europe did a very good report on a no-deal Brexit and what does falling back on WTO terms means. And it shows quite comprehensively that the WTO terms will be no substitute for what we have at the moment. No major trading nation deals solely on WTO terms. The US, with which the EU does not have a trade deal, nevertheless has about 100 side agreements to make sure that the WTO basis works effectively. And of course, on the 30th of March, we won't have any of those in place. So WTO is not the solution. And as a footnote, if the WTO was so marvellous, why is it that the very same people are pushing to leave on WTO terms are saying we should be doing trade deals with other countries? If the WTO was so marvellous, you wouldn't need trade deals in the first place.
And we know from the information given by government this week that they've negotiated very few, only a couple of handfuls out of, I think, a probable 67.
What Liam Fox is in charge of at the moment is rolling over the trade deals that the EU has got with about 70 states. They're not as many agreements, it's about 40 agreements. At the moment, he's only succeeded in rolling over six. One of them is with Switzerland, which is a very important one because Switzerland is a major trading partner. But the others are with the Faroe Islands and the Palestinian Authority. And with great respect to those countries, they are not major recipients of our trade. The major ones, so with Canada, South Korea, Japan, are not at all guaranteed to be in place for the end of March. And so this will create further problems for our exporters if we leave with a no deal. And also key bits of legislation haven't been through Parliament. They're stuck in the Lords because Theresa May is very worried about bringing them into the Commons for fear that they would be amended to say that we should stay in the customs union. So all of this, even if we're heading to a no-deal Brexit, would point to some sort of extension of Article 50 to at least get the legislative framework in place for leaving with no deal. EU may agree to extend Article 50 till the end of June 2019, so a sort of 3-4 month extension. It requires unanimous agreement of the EU 27, so it's not clear, and they may well try and extract other concessions for agreeing to that period of extension. It can't go on much longer than that because the European Parliament elections take place in May, and there will not be elections in the United Kingdom to appoint new MEPs.
And the Sun, after the vote in January, talked about May's Brexit deal being as dead as a dodo, Brextinct, it wrote. Do you think that's true? Do you think after losing by 230 votes, Theresa May can put her withdrawal agreement to Parliament and it can possibly get through?
So the reality is it's the only deal in town. And the EU and the UK have been negotiating it for the best part of 18 months. And because it's the only deal in town, it's the only one that the EU will contemplate. The UK now want to open the withdrawal agreement. They want to have a limitation on time on the backstop. EU's very unlikely to agree to that because it's a bit like an insurance policy. You want an insurance policy, you hope you'll never have to use it. The EU and the UK hope they'll never have to use the backstop. But if you do need it, you don't want a hole in it. You don't want one side to be able to pull the plug on it. You don't want your insurance company to say your insurance is invalid just at the time your house catches fire.
So that really means that Theresa May has to succeed with getting some concessions on the Northern Ireland backstop. And we know that there's talk that Brussels never shifts until the 11th hour, so that might be the 28th of March. Mm. But is that true, or is it just an old wives' story that they will shift, but they let you root around a bit first?
I think there is an indication that they will shift, but they won't shift now because it's not in their interest to shift now, because if they shift now, they make concessions now, they won't be enough for the ERG. Therefore, Theresa May will come back for some more. So it's extremely unlikely that Brussels is going to shift. And so what you have is shadow boxing going on, talks about talks, pretending to talk about things. But neither side really wants to get it sorted now. They want to leave it to the 11th hour to put pressure on the more moderate leavers to say, actually, Theresa May's deal is the only deal that's left, far better than a chaotic Brexit. We will vote in favour of that. And then that, once the WAB goes through, puts us into a period of transition. And that transition could last for up to 3 years till the end of 2022. And then, hopefully, there will be negotiations for the future arrangement. And that ideally, that should segue into the end of the transition period. The concern is that negotiating trade deals is time-consuming, and it's not just trade, it's also about internal and external security. Lots of really difficult issues at stake there too. What's going to happen about the European arrest warrant? What's going to happen about data sharing? Really important with the demise of ISIS and the return of fighters from the Middle East. There's been some very good and effective data sharing across the EU, facilitated by the EU. We will drop out of that on the 29th of March if we don't have something in place. So all of the sensible pressures are on agreeing to Theresa May's deal. The problem is that although it's probably the best she could have negotiated, it sets us up very badly for the future. Why? Because it introduces a new deadline. It won't be the 29th of March anymore, but it will be a deadline at the end of the transition period. And then if we haven't negotiated a future deal, we go into the backstop. And the backstop, the hated backstop, will be, I think, deeply politically unstable. Just to remind you, the backstop is that Northern Ireland stays in the customs union and the single market for goods. Great Britain stays in the customs union only. That means that there will effectively be a border down the Irish Sea, the east-west border, as it's called. And that means that there will be checks on British goods going into Northern Ireland. I think DUP, very unhappy. It makes the politics of it deeply unstable. Scotland will also be very cross indeed. Scotland, a Remainer nation, because they see Northern Ireland getting more favourable treatment than Scotland. And then, of course, that may well destabilise the politics there. So there is huge incentive not to go into the backstop. And therefore, we need to negotiate a trade deal quickly. EU know that. And so that will force us to make all sorts of concessions. So the way that the future has been structured favours the EU over the UK's interests. And we will have to make concessions on things like fishing, possibly even on free movement. So the next few years are going to be really very difficult and pretty volatile.
The Brexiteers have said that they think Article 50, by which member states can withdraw from the EU, needs to be redrafted. What you've described is all the power being on one foot, on one side, and that's the EU side, with the United Kingdom facing the possibility it may actually even break up as a result of wanting to trigger Article 50 and leave the EU. But there's a saying that you shouldn't be a member of a club that you can't leave. Do you accept that the EU presents what might be described as a rather autocratic view to member states?
I think that's right. I think we've always known, and we've said in these podcasts in the past, that the moment Article 50 was triggered, the power would always lie on the EU's side because of the ticking clock. And so, of course, Article 50 was drafted with the intention that it should never be used. The UK's very messy departure has shown the many weaknesses of Article 50 and just how difficult it is to extricate yourself from a club which you have been so deeply embedded in for more than 40 years. So Article 50 has not provided an adequate framework. But of course, just think about it. If Scotland had voted to leave the United Kingdom, the rest of the United Kingdom would have been behaving in much the same way as the EU is behaving towards the UK, playing hardball, making them fight, making the politics very toxic. But I accept longer term, it doesn't make the EU look good. And I don't think Donald Tusk's remarks were helpful from that point of view, because while a lot of Remainers might have condoned those remarks, it makes the EU look rather small.
Now, George Soros, who's funded some of the Remain campaigns, activities, wrote an article this week where he looked at what was happening throughout Europe and the member states of the EU and compared it, surprisingly, to what the Soviet Union was like before it broke up. Do you think that's too dramatic an interpretation, or do you think there are fundamental flaws within the EU, whether that's monetary union and the European Bank? Do you think that we are in a very fragile state with EU membership at the moment?
I think it's fragile, but I think the parallels with the Soviet Union are probably not that helpful, because the EU is founded on the respect for a rule of law, it's founded on human rights, and it's got a court of justice which upholds those principles vigorously. Of course, it's very difficult to manage 27, 28 states with the global pressures that all nation states and big power blocs are being exposed to. So I think it's inevitable that there will be tensions, but I think just making a crude comparison with the Soviet Union probably doesn't help. It doesn't recognise that for many people, the EU is not just a project, but it's an ideal, what they fundamentally believe in. The one thing that we have learned from Brexit is actually the EU is supremely good at technocratic things. We have learnt that the single electricity market, the single skies where planes can fly from London to Rome to Milan and then back via Germany, all of that works really well and citizens have benefited from it very much. But it's quite difficult to put those achievements on the side of a bus. And it's not very good. I think the Brussels comms network is just poor. It's clunky. It doesn't engage adequately with the public to actually show some of the good things that the EU has done.
If we come back to where we began this podcast, which was the idea of perhaps Parliament needing a more formal grand coalition to get some kind of deal through to support the government and Theresa May in her withdrawal agreement and her much-used slogan, if you want to avoid no deal, then you have to vote for a deal. Parliament did come together over the Brady Amendment, didn't it? Do you think it can come together again and bring all the factions to prevent that cliff edge, to prevent what the EU sees as basically a British government and parliament in chaos?
That's a million-dollar question. And the answer is nobody knows. And that's why the vote last night is so significant. It's not significant in itself. It's not going to change anything. But it just shows how much power the ERG can currently wield. And that the fact is that party management in the Conservative Party has seems to have broken down. The whips didn't see this one coming. They didn't see that jamming together the Brady Amendment, which is essentially improve your deal or we leave with no deal, with the Spelman Amendment, which says we shouldn't leave without a deal, is mutually inconsistent. And that's what the ERG were objecting to. It's not been helped throughout by the fact that Theresa May has said repeatedly no deal is better than a bad deal. And now she appears to be saying the opposite, that no deal is a terrible outcome and we should go with her deal. And so the messaging has been confused. And of course, the fundamental problem still is, even if we get the withdrawal agreement through Parliament, we still don't know what the future arrangements might look like. And goes back to your question about the EU having behaved in an autocratic manner. From the EU side, they behave with utmost efficiency. They've said they've set the sequencing, and the sequencing was always very clear. The divorce, Theresa May's deal, transition, and then once we've gone, negotiations over the future deal. And that looks sensible on paper until you start working it through in practice. The backstop, of course, essentially spans all three periods. The divorce, it's in the withdrawal agreement. It's triggered at the end of transition. And it's also about the future relationship. If we'd actually been able to negotiate as a package, both the divorce and the future, or at least have a much better idea of what the future might look like, it may have been easier to get the divorce through Parliament. But at the moment, some of the, particularly the Labour leavers, are saying, well, it is a blind Brexit. Jeremy Corbyn has said this is a blind Brexit. We're leaving, but we don't know the ultimate destination. And that brings us back to the fundamental question of the customs union. Do we want to be in it or do we not? If we want to be in the customs union, whether it's called that or called something else like a customs arrangement, do we want to be in it with the advantages of reduced border checks and no rules of origin checks, thus, of course, facilitating supply chains which depend on it, but without the ability to negotiate free trade agreements? Or do we want to be out of it with all of the friction at the border that entails, but with the freedom to negotiate our own independent trade deals? And that is the really basic question that Theresa May will not expressly confront, because she knows it will split her party.
And perhaps split the Labour Party too, well. Really. So the grand coalition has to involve all the parties, the Liberal Democrats and the SNP too. But finally, Catherine, the 28th of March then, Brussels are going to put up a green flag and just offer the UK some kind of crumbs, which may mean that Theresa May's withdrawal agreement gets through. There's a sort of plan B, but we don't know what it is.
And the plan B may involve extending Article 54 a bit to try and get the key bits of legislation through. That's when you hear talk of a sort of technical extension, that at least both sides will know that the extension is for a particular purpose, getting the WAB through Parliament and having a more orderly Brexit. The trouble is the ERG are paranoid that someone is going to take their Brexit away from them. It may be when we get to the 29th of March, they become more sanguine because they have delivered, they have left the EU, and the technical amendment is really just to deliver the tidiness in Parliament, and then we will be out. So they may be more cooperative then if they know. What they don't want, and they're really worried about, is what the French and Germans have been talking about, which is some sort of extension for about a year, because that they see as a way of kicking the can down the road and removing their prize, which is the Brexit on the 29th of March.
So that Ollie Robbins, the chief negotiator for the UK, overheard conversation in Brussels. It was probably dropping a few hints as to the direction the UK was likely to be going in.
I think that's right. I think it's surprising that he said those things in such a well-known place. But on the other hand, he's human after all, and he didn't really say much that people hadn't thought through already. It's just because it came from his lips that it had more resonance. But the fact is, it does look like Theresa May's deal or some sort of extension, and that clearly would be better for the economics of the country than crashing out without a deal.
And of course, what you've described only takes us to April 2019, and as you've said clearly in this podcast, we've got years of negotiations to go through. So we are now going to be locked into a Brexit eternity.
Yes, Brexit is a process, not an event, and it will certainly keep people like me in their jobs for a bit longer.
LawPod UK is presented by Rosalind English and is produced by One Crown Office Row. For more editions of LawPod UK, you can subscribe to the podcast and recommend us to a friend.